this bill could be the torpedo that sinks our chances for getting a gas pipeline.
Lawmakers approve a flurry of bills at the close of this year's session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 19th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Russian delegation shares offshore development concerns with Barrow residents.
We need to understand that they're not Alaska's problems and they're not our problems. They're not Yakutia's problems. They're communal problems. They're everybody's problems.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. And by North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give.
Neither the House nor the Senate met the 90-day deadline in adjourning the session early this morning, but after a lot of pressure involving some of the most important issues that have been before them this year, they got the job done. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The House and Senate began the final day of the session with members knowing it would be difficult, and that a successful completion would hang on one vote in the House, a Senate bill separating oil and gas taxes. On the other side of the balance were four bills members of the House saw as having major importance to the state. The decisions would be bipartisan, and they would end up arising twice to keep the package from falling apart. House Finance Co-Chair Mike Hawker led the fight for what legislators, in their own lingo, call decoupling. That's the concern that the state's oil and gas taxes will dilute each other when gas begins to flow through a pipeline to North American markets. Hawker sees decoupling as essential protection for the state.
It is us providing an insurance policy against what is a very realistic scenario for calculating taxes in the future that could have resulted in us losing tax revenue as a result of commencing to export our natural gas resources.
Since the bill was introduced, the Parnell administration has argued just as strongly against it. That was enough to spread confusion among members about the merits of the bill. Anchorage Democrat Bob Book saw it as a tax increase.
I have no problem pushing the red button on this, saying I will not increase taxes on the oil companies.
And fellow Democrat Harry Crawford had heard the administration's argument that the bill would destroy an incentive needed to get the North Slope gas line started.
This bill could be the torpedo that sinks our chances for getting a gas pipeline.
It all came down to one vote that everyone had expected and no one was predicting. The first time around, it fell short by two members. The Senate immediately recessed its floor session so members could round up more House votes. It took several hours, but they found four. And after a second vote, with no debate, the tax change was sent to the governor. Meanwhile, the multi-billion-dollar capital projects budget continued to grow as House members added $76 million for a new crime lab. Eagle River Republican Bill Stoltz said it wasn't what he expected when he became finance co-chair.
It's a bigger budget than I am comfortable presenting, but one I'll be voting for. It's one that reflects needs of Alaskans because every member here is a representative of their communities.
Anchorage Democrat Mike Dugan did not support that bill. He put the total spending for the session, including money from the federal government and other sources, at $12 billion. That's in all the budgets combined.
What's happened, put simply, is we had a bunch of money and we spent it.
Dugan said the state cannot spend that much money forever. The budget passed, though, 30-10. The other key bill was the governor's merit-based scholarship. After he mentioned that a special session might be needed to get it on the books, members began to look for a compromise with the governor. His plan was passed, but the money for the scholarships will wait until next year. The governor says he's satisfied with that. Added to the final day's mix, incentives to encourage underground gas storage in Cook Inlet, disclosure requirements for corporate and union election advertising contributors, a plan to reimburse school districts for new construction, and a new development team with deadlines for a natural gas line to service Anchorage and the rail belt. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Voters this fall will decide whether to expand the Alaska legislature. Lawmakers have approved a constitutional amendment ballot question that would create 4 more House and 2 more Senate districts. The question grew out of concern by rural lawmakers who believe this year's census and the redrawing of legislative districts will center more political power in urban areas. The measure passed both the House and Senate and does not need the governor's signature to put the question to voters. Alaska lawmakers voted yesterday to substantially reduce the fee paid by cruise ship passengers. The bill they passed is expected to meet terms of an agreement that will end a lawsuit brought by the cruise industry. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The head tax cut measure passed the Senate 17-3 last week. The House passed a slightly changed version 27-13 Sunday night. The Senate agreed to the changes shortly before adjourning. Juneau Representative Beth Kurtula says she hopes the bill will help bring more ships to Alaska.
The small merchants, not the Caribbean Emeralds, but the small merchants in Southeast Alaska have made their case. They have been not hiring the kids coming back. They are starting to go under. The properties are starting to come available. And we need to do something.
The $46 per person tax will drop to $19.50 for more than 90% of passengers. That's a decrease first to $34.50 for all traveling on big cruise ships. Another $15 will be deducted for those stopping in Ketchikan and Juneau, which levy their own head taxes. Almost all ships stop at both ports. The $46 tax, plus another $4 for an environmental monitoring program, were part of a 2006 Citizens Initiative passed by the voters. Cruise lines say it made Alaska trips too expensive for many travelers. Critics say the economy, not the head tax, drove passengers and ships away. Anchorage Representative Mike Dugan says the legislation will not stop all legal challenges.
This bill will cost $22 million a year, and for it we get the dubious distinction of having one trade organization not sue us. Anybody else can sue us on the same issues, and it won't be affected at all here.
The Alaska Cruise Association sued last year, saying the tax violated the law because some of its revenues were spent on projects far from port cities. The association signed an agreement with Governor Sean Parnell to drop the suit if the tax was lowered and spending was largely limited to ports. The tax passed Sunday does both. Lawmakers battled over how remaining tax proceeds would be spent before passing the bill. The Senate's version gave Juneau and the city of Ketchikan an automatic $5 per passenger share of the revenues. Existing law exempts the cities because they charge their own head taxes. Haines Representative Bill Thomas proposed eliminating what he called double dipping.
If we vote and keep this in here, and we'll address it at our debate the bill later, 72% of this cruise ship passenger tax will go to two communities without even consideration of emerging ports.
But some lawmakers say the communities carry a bigger burden than other cruise ship ports. Juneau Representative Kathy Munoz says it's a matter of numbers.
Juneau and Ketchikan receive more than 90% of the itinerary of the visits, the passenger visits. It's very important, I think, to pass legislation that's fair.
House lawmakers bypassed changes made by their own finance committee and approved largely the same measure passed by the Senate. They did add a legislative review of the tax, as well as penalties for Juneau and Ketchikan if they raise their local fees. They also dedicated cruise ship gambling tax proceeds to the pot of money lawmakers distribute for projects. The Senate agreed to all the House changes. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, paying tribute to Vietnam vets whose names aren't on the wall in Washington.
They knew from day one when their loved ones came back, they were different. And that difference was a result of war.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
A new fish buyer is planning to open on the Kuskokwim River. Kuskokwim Seafoods will be just the second buyer on the river and the only one operating above Bethel. KYUK's Shane Iverson reports.
In the heyday of the Kuskokwim commercial fishery, openings would occur for hundreds of miles up the river, and fishers in villages like Tuluksak and Ukatchuk could sell their salmon to floating tenders nearby. But a decline in the run strength and the crash of the wild salmon markets in the 90s forced fish buyers to scale back, even up until last year when the only buyer moved all their tenders below Bethel. Patrick Peter Vukatchuk says for many small-scale commercial fishermen like him, traveling to catch and sell fish just hasn't been worth it lately.
Fishermen wasn't interested in going down to fish due to high cost of gas and oil.
But this year, the floating tenders will be coming to Peter and other villages in the mid-Kuskokwim.
Right now, we will have, for sure, two tenders above Bethel, and we're trying to figure out how to do three.
Stuart Curry is with Kuskokwim Seafoods, a new company trying to capitalize on the unique Kuskokwim fishery.
The fact that it's primarily a subsistence fishery and that it's being harvested by native fishermen in small boats, you know, it's much more hands-on than, you know, the big Bristol Bay fisheries and other fisheries like in Southeast Alaska, where, you know, thousands of fish are caught in a very short period of time, and there's maybe not as much care as what the people here give their fish.
Curry says they're targeting whole food retailers whose customers are environmentally conscientious and willing to shell out for some high-quality salmon. Kuskokwim Seafoods will be joining Coastal Villages Seafood as the only fish buyers on the river. As a community development quota, CVS is involved in several fisheries like pollock and herring. They've stayed in the salmon business as a service to their CDQ members, but they say it costs them money, more than $1 million a year. Curry says as a business, Kuskokwim Seafoods will have to take a different approach to turn a profit.
Where we see an opportunity is by controlling our costs that we're going to put into the fish. So real low overhead operation here.
But the risks are real. As part of their new operations, they're purchasing a large ice maker, which was turned over to the city of Bethel after the last private fish buyer went belly up, thousands of dollars in debt. One group that's sure to benefit this summer is the mid-river fishermen. Patrick Peter in Ukatchuk says interest in his village is high.
The more tenders we have, the more fishermen will commercial fish.
Like any year on the Kuskokwim, the commercial opening will be limited by the strength of the runs and the ability of subsistence fishers to get their fill first. In Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Legislation giving coastal communities greater say in local development issues was withdrawn at the end of the session, with promises the issue would get a fair hearing next time. Local communities lost responsibility for coastal management in 2003 when then-Governor Frank Murkowski gave the Department of Natural Resources authority over the Alaska Coastal Management Program. The Coastal Policy Council, a group of local government and state agency representatives, was disbanded. Since then, coastal legislators from southeast to the North Slope have been working for more local control. The current legislation would have created another policy board with members from the state's five coastal districts and resource agencies. The board would approve statewide standards for coastal management. The bill met opposition from the Parnell administration, industry, and several majority lawmakers. Wasilla Senator Charlie Huggins is Rules Chairman. He opposed the bill. While he says he understands communities have lost faith in the DNR, he will take the leap of faith that talks would improve the problems.
We're going to figure out how to begin the solution on this with others and look at what the obstacles are. And we know that this next session, it will be on our agenda here.
Nome Senator Donnie Olson sponsored the bill in the Senate. He says it had become the object of hyperbole with no solution for local communities.
There's the perception that we have been delayed, stonewalled, and avoided a real substantive discussion on the merits of this bill. As you know, after 2 years, the Senate Finance Committee has had a lack of cooperation from its opponents. There has been no suggestion of any alternative proposal to solve the issues of for local input.
Kotzebue Representative Reggie Jewell introduced the House bill. He says he's disappointed the administration did not engage in the discussion on the House side, but he says the delay may provide an opportunity for coastal towns and villages that feel the brunt of development.
You know, with ACMP sunsetting in 2011, we probably need to take a little bit broader look at coastal issues than just strictly ACMP. How does NEPA and all these other things kind of fit into it? So maybe we take a broader look at the issue over the interim so that input piece is there and available to people who are going to get impacted by a lot of activity.
Jewell and Olson say supporters will not let the issue drop as local communities become more frustrated with state control over coastal development in their area.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
A delegation of Russian scientists and indigenous leaders just concluded a trip to Barrow to compare experiences with Barrow's Inupiaq residents about the impacts of the oil and gas industry on coastal communities. The group was sponsored by Pacific Environment, an environmental organization focused on protecting the Pacific Rim. Shauna Larson is PE's Alaska Program co-director. She says indigenous people in Russia and on the North Slope share concerns about offshore development impacting their traditional life. Larson says North Slope Borough officials were interested to hear about directional drilling, a method being used currently in Russia.
It's been very neat to see a true exchange of indigenous people just, you know, groups, community, indigenous people who are saying, hey, we're impacted by this and we're just trying to live our life. We're subsistence people. We're, you know, want to hang on to our culture, our language, our way of life. All of this change is coming in. You know, how do we endure it? How do we make sure the best practices are used? How do we get through this? And just offering genuine support to each other as communities, it's an amazing connection.
The Russian visitors were from the Far East area of their country, Sakhalin Island, where oil exploration and production has been going on since the mid-1990s, and the Yakutia Republic that borders the Laptev Sea and the Arctic Ocean. The Russians, through their translator, Evan Sparling, said they enjoyed the people of Barrow and were happy they were able to see a polar bear during their visit. Mikhail Trovimov is a traditional hunter. He says big development is considered an issue of national importance in Russia, but he shares the worries he heard expressed in Barrow about the impacts to their subsistence traditions.
И вообще, как в предыдущем вопросе,
I believe that, or we also have these large projects, these mega projects going on, and I believe that we need to look at them communally and that we need to understand that they're not Alaska's problems and they're not our problems, they're not Yakutia's problems, they're communal problems, they're everybody's problems.
Eugenia Saposnikov is a young scientist who said benefits to indigenous residents of Sakhalin Island have been small compared to the impacts of the huge development projects taking place there by Shell and others.
As a result of the beginning of the Sakhalin 1 and Sakhalin 2 projects, residents of Sakhalin received or had forced upon them a lot of new problems, including environmental degradation and destruction of roads.
He urged Alaskans to keep a close eye on how extraction agreements are developed to address environmental and subsistence concerns. Viktor Afanasyev is a 5-year volunteer with the environmental group Sakhalin Watch. He said one of the main goals for their visit to the North Slope was to share information about Shell and what he called their weak spots in their work at Sakhalin.
В частности, мы с удивлением узнали, что буровые растворы
Boluche?
Well, one thing that we were very surprised to learn is that during exploratory drilling, Shell is intending to discard the muds and the what comes out of the well into the waters of the ocean.
На Сахалине, к примеру, мы этого уже не позволяем компаниям.
On Sakhalin, we do not allow any companies to do that.
The group finished their time in the state by visiting South Central Alaska and the Chicoloon School to compare dance regalia and traditions. Shell Alaska's statement on drilling discharge states in part that Shell and the North Slope Borough agree that the borough-appointed Science Advisory Committee will review Shell's proposed exploration drilling discharge protocol. The panel will assess all available data on discharge and will make a recommendation as to what is the most environmentally sound way of handling discharge into the ocean. Links to presentations by the Russian delegation and Shell's document entitled Discharge Mythbuster is at our website, aprn.org. The Vietnam War Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. bears the names of more than 58,000 men and women killed in service. But there are hundreds of veterans of that conflict who have died in the decades since the war who are not listed on the wall. The group, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, wants to pay tribute to them, too. So every year inducts men and women into their honor roll. Today in Washington, 97 Americans were remembered in an in-memory ceremony, including one Alaskan. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Alan Wayne Paré.
Jackie Ronald Patterson, Sr. Wife and...
And our father.
Father. Of Ross W. Snare, McVie, Haiku, Vietnam, Agent Orange.
Father and husband, Anthony John Zavarelli, 47 years old, Agent Orange.
My brother.
My husband.
James Thomas Alexander.
The names being read by loved ones are not on the wall. These men and women have died in recent years, the families say, as a delayed result of their service in a far-off land so many decades ago. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund says just because they didn't die in combat doesn't mean the war left them unscathed. The master of ceremonies at Monday's tribute, Richard Schneider, runs the Non-Commissioned Officers Association of the USA.
To the families who loved and tendered and took care of them, they knew from day one when their loved ones came back, they were different. And that difference was a result of war. And that difference was something that we, as the Vietnam veteran community, have highlighted over and over again.
Schneider says the ceremony was equally for the living, the loved ones of veterans who welcomed them home with open arms through tough times and vivid nightmares of Vietnam.
They did something that this nation could not do over the past 40 years. And that was to recognize and to properly take care of the Vietnam veterans who were wounded, who carried the remnants of Agent Orange, who had the insidious diseases. And they fought with their loved ones for health care. They fought for recognition of the many illnesses that have since been defined as presumptive of the Vietnam era.
The veterans' families gathered on the mall say their loved ones were affected by chemicals like Agent Orange. Gail and Marcus Tremmel of Ohio lost husband and father, Michael Tremmel, 2 years ago. He was a two-time Vietnam veteran in the U.S. Navy.
He did have a disability from the Navy for post-traumatic stress. But I think the Agent Orange, he got diabetes and kidney disease, and we're sure that that was probably caused from that because no one else in his family ever had diabetes. And
There was nothing ever official as far as Agent Orange discovered, but like we said, he had medical problems that are not really relevant in our family. So,
Michael Tremmel and the other 96 veterans honored had placards bearing their names and photos placed before the wall. The Tremmels also left a spread of other photos showing Michael as an 18-year-old boot camp graduate with his family or enjoying the sea. His wife, Gail, says he was a Navy man through and through. Gail and son Marcus lingered by his photos propped up against the wall.
hate to walk away, like I'm just leaving him here again, but he would be proud. I'm sure he is proud that we brought him here today.
One of the placards honored Alaskan Charles Hamilton Shurtleff of Fairbanks. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski was the only member of Congress to speak at the ceremony. She called it a reminder to appreciate and thank veterans every day.
Standing here today in this spot reminds me, we're just so overcome by feelings of respect, of dignity towards those who have served, and truly the solemnity of it all.
Murkowski introduced Eagle River retired Staff Sergeant Bob Lupo. He's the chaplain for the Vietnam Veterans Motorcycle Club in Alaska and the author of a poem called Emotions, which he was asked to read at Monday's ceremony.
I will stand in the rain and weep with no shame to pay homage to them, those women and men. They answered the call, freedom for all. And the price of freedom, it's written on the wall.
Lupo says the names being shared deserve recognition and honor.
They're the unsung heroes, you know, the people that fit the criteria to get on the wall. You know, God bless them. But there are a lot of people that served and led lives that were truly devastating for both themselves and their families for years after Vietnam. And they need to be remembered.
Lupo plans to start an Alaskan version of the In Memory event next year. He's been working with local groups to get things off the ground.
Alaska is the state that has the most veterans per capita, and so that would be the first place where it should be, beside the wall.
As families said their goodbyes and left the wall, the placards bearing their loved ones' names stayed behind. The Park Service planned to leave them there until nightfall, when they would collect them to store in their archived collection. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld and Rosemary Alexander in Juneau and Shane Iverson in Bethel. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Does your child not look at you when you talk to him? Are you worried your child doesn't play with other children? Or do you wonder why your child seems to be in her own world? Well, these could be the early signs of autism. For more information about autism and resources in your community, visit autism.alaska.gov or call 1-800-799-7570. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.